This is the Texas Standard.
There's been growing concern over the way police treat citizens, especially blacks and other minorities. Witness the rise of Black Lives Matter, the story of Michael Brown in Ferguson, or closer to home, the arrest of Sandra Bland, who was later found dead in a Waller County jail in apparent suicide. But the folks of the Austin American-Statesman have been investigating another kind of fatal police encounter, one that's been overlooked until now. Eric Dexheimer is a reporter with the Austin American-Statesman. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
What is it about these cases that you've been looking at that distinguishes them from, say, the Sandra Bland affair or that of Michael Brown?
This is a very specific subset of custodial death, that is, people who die in police custody. We looked at people who were not shot. That's already been very well covered, very well reported on and studied. We didn't report on suicides or natural causes. Those are two of the larger categories of people who die in custody. But instead, we looked at people who were taken into custody under restraint and ended up dead. And we looked at this from 2005 through 2016.
How many deaths did you find? I mean, did you come up with a number?
A little over 250. Again, that's over an 11-year period.
When a shot's not fired, when someone is restrained and taken into custody, I would imagine drugs are often attributed as a prime cause of death?
Often it's considered accidental. Drugs are considered a big cause of death. Some of the other ones we saw, though, were the actual restraint itself, restraint technique, or the act of the restraint coupled with some exertion. We saw tasers were implicated in 8 of these, I think, and then another 4 indirectly implicated, which is kind of surprising because taser is considered a non-lethal weapon, they like to say a less lethal weapon. But it's not often that you see a medical examiner say a taser is implicated in some of these deaths.
But what is this about a determination? Nearly 50 people, according to your reporting, determined to have died in police custody of, and I want to quote here, excited delirium.
So excited delirium is a controversial, I'll call it a diagnosis, but a designation in the medical community. It's not accepted by all medical bodies, but police, some medical examiners, not all medical examiners, emergency physicians, not all other physicians, recognize it as a constellation of symptoms that usually revolve around drugs, physical exertion, and almost always police restraint. So civil rights advocates are suspicious because this is something that occurs almost exclusively when people are restrained by police.
Not only that, it appears that it almost always occurs when we're talking about Black or Hispanic men.
That was one of our findings, that in, I think it was about 83% of the cases where a medical examiner said that a person had died of excited delirium, it was a Black or a Hispanic man.
The first story in the series that you've been working on for some time, you and your colleagues have been working on, involves a couple, Kathy and Robert Dyer of Paris, Texas. What happened to their 18-year-old son? They got a call in the middle of the night, right?
They did. They have an 18-year-old son. He's the third of their children, and he was he had slight build. He was a skateboarder. They're a very close family, and he was in Mesquite, and they got a call in the middle of the night saying that you have to come down to the hospital, that your son has some serious injuries, and he's in serious trouble.
But the parents get down there, and they won't let him see their son.
And they said that the police were there and they would not let them see their son because they said that he had been charged with a felony and he was in serious trouble. It turned out that according to the documents and according to the information they were able to get, he had bit a police officer during a confrontation they had. Graham was, by all accounts, having a bad trip on LSD. And he was at a junior high school in Mesquite and was acting bizarrely. And police were called and they arrived. And after a scuffle, ended up taking him into custody.
But he never went home.
He never went home. They took him in the police car to the jail. And in the course of taking him there, he threw himself around the back of the police car. And the police said that he had injured himself so badly by hitting his head against the side of the inside of the car that his head injuries caused his death.
Now, the parents were willing to accept the police account of this. I mean, one of them is a teacher, right? They're upstanding citizens in the community of Paris.
One's a teacher, one's a retired engineer with TxDOT. They had some questions early on. They had some they had noticed that their son had some scratches on their arms that they didn't understand. There was a doctor who they said told them It appeared that O'Graham had been the victim of an assault.
An assault.
And I think it was the, you know, the traumatic injuries that he had sustained.
They asked the police for the documents, for more information, videos, anything?
Yeah, so they asked the police for their investigative file to just get some additional information, a narrative, a series of reports that police produce after an event. They wanted to take a look at those. If it included videos, they wanted to see those. And the police refused to give it to them.
Was that the end of the story?
So after failing to do that, Kathy was on the internet one night and she ran across the FBI website and noticed that the agency would look into cases of civil rights violations. And so she wrote them a letter and the agency responded a few months later and said, "Our apologies, we can't help you with this." For a while, that was the end of it. And it occurred to Kathy one night that if the agency had looked into it, they must have gotten some of the records.
Hmm.
They must have gotten some of the videos and some of the reports. And so she thought, well, what if I asked the FBI for it instead of the Mesquite Police Department? And so she sent off that request to them. Soon after that, they got a series of videos that arrived. Their Freedom of Information request, that is the federal version of the Texas Open Records Act, had been successful, and the FBI started giving them the videos. And the videos were of dash cameras pointed at the scene. There was another video taken of Graham in the back seat of the police cruiser, and then there was another video of him being delivered to the jail.
These videos showed that the night did not unfold the way that the Mesquite Police Department explained it.
There were a couple things that did not jive with what the Dyer family believed that they had heard from the police. One was, at some point, the police cruiser pulls over, and these videos are taken at night, so they're kind of ghostly looking, and you can see a hand reach in with a taser, and it tases Graham in the leg, and then pulls back, and very clearly, it appears to be deliberately, the taser is placed into his groin area, and he's tased there, it looks like, a couple of times on purpose. And I should say that at least one expert I spoke to said that, look, there's a couple things about this that don't make sense. One is, why would you try to hurt a person with a taser to try to gain compliance when that person is already doing his best to hurt himself?
Hurt himself.
That doesn't make any sense. The other is, in a case where a person is throwing himself around a vehicle and hurting himself, why would you not, A, try to restrain him better and to prevent him from doing that, and B, go to the hospital? But instead, they went to the police department or the jail. And the video there shows that Graham was unloaded from the car. He looks very limp, certainly non-combative. In their reports to the Attorney General's office, which collects these custodial death reports, the police department said that they had to put him in a restraint chair in order to keep him under control. But what the video shows, which appears to be somewhat different than that, is that he is very non-combative and appears almost unresponsive.
Why did you feel it was important to begin your series with this story?
I mean, we all know that people get shot and killed, and that there are sometimes reasons for that, and sometimes it's less apparent. But I was surprised to learn that there were such a large number of people who die in police custody where someone is not shot. And these are some of the police department's most difficult cases. They often involve a physical confrontation. They involve people at their worst. They're mentally ill and sometimes unmedicated, or as you said at the beginning, they're on drugs and they are out of control, and the police really have to work to get them under control, and they have to balance protection of themselves and the public against protecting mm-hmm, these people. Mm-hmm. At the same time, there are instances we saw, as in the Sandra Bland case, where it appeared as though maybe the situation didn't have to be escalated as it was. There are situations where maybe someone was restrained or tased or otherwise hurt in a way that perhaps was unnecessary. And those are the questions that we're asking in this series.
This is part of an extended investigation that's being conducted by the Austin American Statesman, where Eric Dexheimer is a reporter. You can read the first installment in this series of reports at statesman.com, and we'll have a link to it at texasstandard.org. You can also read about it in the Sunday edition of the Austin American Statesman. Eric, thanks so much for coming in and telling us about this work. We sure do appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.